Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today, well, you could call him one of the greatest shooters in NBA history, though he's never scored a point. He is George Kalinske, the longtime official photographer for the Knicks and Madison Square Garden. And when I say longtime, I mean since 1966. And George has shot some of the most iconic photos you've seen, even if you didn't know he was the name behind those images. And here's a partial list of some of the people that he's shot over the decades: Muhammad Ali, Frank Sinatra, and he's got phenomenal personal stories about both of those guys, the Rolling Stones, the Pope, Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan, Bill Russell, Elton John, John Lennon, Bill Clinton, Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, Jimi Hendrix, Beyonce, U2, Elvis Presley. He's had an incredible career, and that career, the sports part of it, or the basketball part of it, now being rewarded in a few weeks. George's work is already in the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, and now George Kalinske himself will be heading to Springfield. He is one of the recipients of the Kurt Gowdy Media Award this year. He'll receive that honor on September 10th during induction weekend. The others getting the Gowdy Award this year, of course, Mike Gorman, the longtime Celtics broadcaster, and Mel Greenberg, longtime sports writer and a pioneer in covering the women's game. So those two and George all going in under the Gowdy Award banner. George's work, he's been featured in Times Square, in the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, Museum of Modern Art. The Library of Congress added his photography in 2019. So he's an absolute legend in the world of photography, including sports photography. And if you just Google his name, George Kalinske, and say Bill Russell, you will see one of the most amazing shots you've ever seen of Bill Russell. Google him, George Kalinske and Willis Reed, and you'll get a couple of the most iconic shots of Willis Reed in both 1970 and 73. He's got a bunch of great stories to share. He's a phenomenal person too. Before we get to the interview, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover on your favorite podcast platform. If you have feedback, hit me on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my interview with the legendary George Kalinske is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by a soon-to-be Hall of Famer, already a Hall of Fame person, George Kalinske. George, how are you, my friend?
Howard, how are you? It's nice to be with you.
It's great to be with you, too. It's been too long since I've seen you because I have not been to the Garden in at least a year and a half, and I think you haven't been there much in that time either. So nice that we could at least connect via Zoom. And nice that we can connect on this occasion. We're just a few weeks out now from you going into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield. How are you feeling about this honor? I assume you are still busily working on your acceptance speech. How are you feeling just about this moment, about this honor? What's it going to mean to you?
It's a mixed feeling. There's so many terrible things going on in the world. And we should be figuring out ways to help our world be a better place. But I also have the feeling of being excited and exhilarated because I never thought I would be elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame. The Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame to me is like a shrine. And growing up when it was in its early stages, I watched it grow. And then to see and to hear and to get a phone call from John DeLiva that I am going to be elected into the Hall of Fame with the Kurt Gowdy Media Award, I can't tell you how great that feels for anybody who's a lover of basketball. To get into the Basketball Hall of Fame is just fabulous.
No, it's incredible and well deserved. I remember talking to Andy Bernstein, of course, longtime photographer for the NBA and the Lakers, a couple years ago when he was about to go in with the Kurt Gowdy Award. And for both of you, I mean, it's a recognition of a lifetime of work, but of all of the icons that you have photographed, all the Hall of Famers themselves, you now, in a way, get to join them. So I wanted to ask you about this year's Hall of Fame class. Let's start there, because Chris Bosh is going in, Paul Pierce, Chris Webber, Ben Wallace. All of those guys, of course, have passed through the Garden many times during your time as the Garden photographer. Do you have any particular memories of any of those four, whether it's a moment or even a photo, an image of one of those four guys?
You know, I remember Chris Bosh somehow more than the others because I took an interest in what he had to say. Mm. And I thought that he was rather sort of intellectual in terms of understanding what's really going on in the world, and he was very upfront. He knew how to speak. I loved his creativity in relation to being together with the fans. He knew that a good relationship with the fans was important, and he did his best to be. He was funny. He was in a way he was like an entertainer. Some of the other players each have their own. I have my memory of Boston. When anybody wins an award from Boston, I notice that everybody from Boston, it seems, comes to join and be part of it. And this year you have a very popular Boston player who, little by little, became the voice of the Celtics. Actually, the voice of the Celtics is going to be inducted.
That's true, too. Mike Gorman.
I think that's really wonderful. But I just feel, I feel thrilled that I'm part of this and that I have an opportunity to congratulate people like Mike Breen, who won the award before me, and the Hall of Fame, who have selected a certain amount of people to represent the game. I love somehow when you talk about the game, it refers more to basketball, let's say, than to baseball. For those of you who like the game, somehow is very basketball to me. Now, maybe it's because of the way I grew up, and I love baseball. I actually had a tryout with the Baltimore Orioles, and that was one of the thrills that I had in my athletic career. And I always felt that it was important to have something that you could really do and enjoy and be good at. And I felt that somewhere in the art field, that was going to be me. And I had a tryout with the Baltimore Orioles many years ago. And they actually offered me a contract to play. And I said to myself, self, you're not going to really be a great ball player. You're not going to be Mickey Mantle. You're not going to be Willie Mays. But I think I can be a great artist. And somehow by being at the training camp for the Orioles, it actually more solidified my feeling about being in the world of art in some way. And it turned out that photography was the way. I was a cartoonist. I did paintings. I did many things in the world of art. And I spoke to so many people. It's amazing the amount of people who enjoy talking about the art world and who are in the art world. So anyway, I felt that that was the place for me and that I wasn't going to be a great ball player. So they did me a favor by letting me play. And then I measured myself and said, Kolinsky, you're not going to be Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays.
Well, this is how it goes, right? So if you love sports the way we both do, at a certain point, I realize I'm not going to be a wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers, which was my boyhood team. That was the team I rooted hardest for. And so, yeah, we find other ways into the sports world. You got the job at the Garden in 1966. What do you remember about how that came about? Did you have any inkling at the time that this is something that could almost literally last a lifetime and take you to so many amazing places, literally and figuratively? How did the start of this come about?
My career actually started in 1966, and I ran into Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali, who was Cassius Clay at the time, in Miami, where I was interviewing for a job as a sports cartoonist or political cartoonist for the Miami Herald. And I had to think about that twice. Anyway, the Miami Herald wanted to hire me and as a sports cartoonist and political cartoonist. And I was just debating with me, with my family, if this is something we want to do by coming down to Miami and living in Miami, which is not a bad place to live. And anyway, I followed Cassius Clay into the gym, and Angelo Dundee stopped me. He said, "You can't come in unless you pay a dollar." And I had this camera around my shoulder, which I basically only took for pictures that were part of my family. And I said, it just came out of my mouth. I said, "Angelo, I'm the photographer of Madison Square Garden." And Angelo said, "Okay, comedian, come on in." So that's how I got into the gym. And then I had this, my Rolly, my one camera that I had, which was a pretty good camera. I went to Pratt and I needed a good camera to photograph my designs that I was making at Pratt. And so I knew how to work the camera pretty well. And so I took pictures of Cassius Clay working out. I thanked Angelo for letting me in to have this wonderful opportunity to photograph people who are famous. I never photographed a famous person before. So I left the gym, I got it, and I drove to where our motel was, and I saw that Muhammad Ali, it's easy to say Muhammad Ali because that's who he is, but in those days he was Cassius Clay. And I heard on the news that Cassius Clay was doing something newsworthy, so I brought my roll of film that I shot in the gym to the Miami Herald, the photography department. And they put one of the pictures over the wire service. And the next day, one of my pictures is all over the world. So this is 1966. I thought to myself, I said, "Self, this is something you can do and that you can have fun at." And I certainly went at it pretty quickly, because the next day, by having one of my pictures all over the world, was a big deal. So I went to John Condon, who was the PR director of Madison Square Garden Boxing. And he said, if you can come to me with one roll of film, I have the chutzpah to hire you. And that's exactly what he said. He said, if you have the chutzpah to come to me with one roll of film, I have the chutzpah to hire you. And that's how I became the photographer of Madison Square Garden, the New York Knicks, the Rangers, and eventually 2 million pictures later, I feel so thrilled and honored to be in the Hall of Fame.
It's absolutely incredible. And some of your most iconic photos, I mean, you mentioned Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, becomes a recurring theme for you, right? I mean, he's somebody you shot many times. Did you tell me about, you know, how you got to know him as both a subject and just one-to-one over the years? What kind of relationship do you think you built with him?
When I had that first photo shoot, so to speak, in the gym where, in the Fifth Street gym where Muhammad Ali was, that was important to me in relation to having Muhammad Ali as my friend, because it wasn't so fast as I mentioned it before. It really was something where I looked in my camera, I saw Ali's eyes. It sort of excited me that I can take someone famous and actually see him in my camera. And I thought that was a very important time to get to know Cassius Clay and Muhammad Ali. So we just started a relationship, a friendship that just kept going on, because I always had assignments to photograph Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, and it was a real great opportunity, a privilege to be near him, to talk with him. And as time went on, you start seeing that he has issues, I have issues, we all have issues, and that we can start talking to each other as friends. And somehow we clicked, and there was a chemistry that I had with Muhammad, and he loved art, and he loved Leroy Neiman. We were like a threesome with Leroy Neiman, and we would go walking here or there, and Leroy was always asking Ali about boxing, and Ali would ask Leroy about painting, and Leroy did so many paintings and mainly sketches, actually, for us. And I was really interested as an artist to start off with. But Ali was really interested in the world of art. And he knew more about art. He was a pretty good artist. And I still like to look at his pictures that he did of clowns and children and airplanes, mostly airplanes. And he loved kids, he loved children, and he did so much for making kids happy that were around him. I remember Ali coming to the garden, and he's carrying this big suitcase, and I'm saying, that must be heavy, what's in there? And he said, they're cards for kids to sign, I can sign my autograph to the kids. I said, but this is like a trunk. Even for you, this has got to be heavy. He said, for whatever I can do for the kids, I'm happy and I want to do it. Wow. And the kids are the important people in this world. These are the people we have to be good to and teach and learn and grow up with.
That's fantastic. You know, with Ali, there's this obvious charisma about him, right? He's one of the greatest fighters and one of the greatest athletes of all time, but he also just has this aura about him, a spark. Do you find, George, that in the people that you've shot over the years, whether it's athletes, whether it's all the years of shooting Patrick Ewing, or when Michael Jordan comes through the garden, when Kobe comes through the garden, when LeBron comes through the garden, or whether it's Elton John or Mick Jagger, whoever it may be, are the best subjects for you as photographer people who, in addition to their talent, just have that other special something? And is that something definable? Is it something you can key in on and say, yeah, like, this is somebody that I really want to shoot because there's this spark, and I can see it through my viewfinder.
Iconic is an interesting word. I had an exhibit a few years ago, and I'm going to answer your question. I had an exhibit a few years ago at the museum in New York, and the National Historical Society, and I sort of looked at my work after they mounted it on the wall, and I said to myself, "You took all these pictures of icons," and I mean, I was like, I had goosebumps, and I was for the first time. This is only a couple of years ago, but for the first time, I looked at my work, even if it was not in a book or on a wall, but in a place where I had Picasso on one side of the wall and my pictures were on the other. And that was a good feeling to have Picasso on the other side of the wall.
Pretty cool.
Maybe someday I'll make it so we'll be on the same side of the wall. But I said, "You took all those iconic pictures." And it just really, it hit me that this was important, that the ultimate picture of Sinatra or Ali, Elton John, Pavarotti, I seem to have taken the favorite photo of so many people. And that's the most important, that taking the most important or the most liked picture of somebody, to me, is the ultimate, story, and the ultimate,
it's like achievement, right? Like that's the ultimate for a photographer. You capture the moment that everybody else talks about.
To capture the moment of a person and to have that person tell me that was their favorite photograph that anyone ever took of them, that to me is the ultimate compliment. I'm sorry, I couldn't think of the word compliment. But that's the ultimate compliment to a photographer. And I looked and I said, "You took a lot of pictures, but a lot of pictures don't mean that much. It has to do with quality. And there's so many pictures that I have taken that turn out to be iconic pictures, like Willis Reed walking on the court. It was iconic because it was a moment that was very special. And not only was it a moment that was special, it was a photograph that was judged by its artistic merit. And the artistic merit of a picture is really the ultimate dream for a photographer to be able to execute. I remember getting a phone call from Nancy and Tina Sinatra. And Tina said, and her father had just passed away only a few days before. And she called me, and Tina had tears in her eyes. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but she said, "Of all the pictures that have ever been," she said, "George, I have to tell you this. Of all the pictures that have been taken of my father, no picture had the aura, no picture had the essence of how you captured him. I love my father. I think in this song that you took the picture of him, one for my baby, 3 o'clock in the morning." She said, "I was that person that he was singing to. And I just think that I just wanted you to know that that's a picture that was more important to us as a family, as a photograph, than any other picture that was taken of my father, Frank Sinatra."
That's amazing. Is that, so there's like, you have several incredible shots of Frank Sinatra. One of which, as I understand it, I think you had conceptualized, where he's basically like a boxer in the ring. Is it that one, or is it one, is it more the up close one on his tight on his face as he's singing? Cause you have several of him, I believe.
Of Sinatra?
Yeah.
There are a lot. And, I have a lot of pictures of Sinatra, and to think back that I can come up with the pictures that the family likes, that Frank liked. Frank, every Christmas, Frank said, I need some pictures for Christmas gifts. And so I made him a few prints, and whatever he asked for, and whatever Frank asked for, Frank gets. So he signed pictures as gifts for people at Christmas time.
That's awesome.
But the one picture that he really loved was one with a cigarette in his hand, and his family loved that picture too. And there was an arty, again, we were into art, but there was an art element to that picture that was so important. And when you take a picture of somebody important, or a picture that is a really great shot, and may or may not be important, but it's a great shot, you don't know necessarily how good the picture is going to be until you see it develop. And like some people ask me, do you know, did you know that in your camera you had a great shot? And I said, no, I didn't know until I developed it. And then you can tell, because some pictures, like Willis walking on the court, to mention a picture I keep talking about, because it was such an important moment at Madison Square Garden, and for that matter, in the world of basketball. The aura of Willis walking on the court was not understood fully for maybe 5 or 10 years later. And then 10 years after Willis walked on the court and the Knicks are not winning and basketball is becoming more important, you just see that picture is emerging. And I think it was the first picture that was in the Hall of Fame as a photograph for being in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure, but I think I'm right. But that picture became more famous as time went on. And that's something that you don't know. Now, a picture of like Pavarotti, where he's going like this, and the encore, and he just is in a typical Pavarotti movement, and also the hands up have such meaning. The hands of Elvis, the hands of so many entertainers and sports people who, at the end, you win the Stanley Cup, and your arms are up, like Messier has his arms up. That's the ultimate picture that you're looking for. But then you can come up with a situation like Bill Russell, who I took a photograph of him rebounding. And that simple rebounding picture may be my favorite picture in sports, and certainly in basketball, that I ever took.
Wow.
It was, to me, it was arty. It was aesthetically beautiful, actually. And he looked like Bill Russell in this picture. It looked like he was, have somebody sculpture him in this position, and that position will be, he would be known forever. And it turns out that turned out to be Bill Russell's favorite photograph. He said that anybody who wants to use a picture of him as best he can, he's going to try to make it be that's the photograph that is being used.
This is the shot, if I'm looking at the right one, George. It's in black and white, and Russell only has one leg planted because the other foot is in the air as high as the basketball itself. Is that the shot?
It's an amazing situation that his foot went higher than his head.
It's incredible.
I was talking to somebody today about that, and somebody who was interested in it, and talking about the picture, and the person only knew that it was a good shot. And I feel it was my best shot that I ever took in basketball, if not sports.
Wow.
But it's like a carving. It's a sculpture. It has a beginning, a middle, an end. It has all the elements that you want in a picture. And this is also arguably the greatest, one of the two or three greatest players of all time. He, Russell actually was my favorite player of all time. And I love the fact that he was able to bring the ball up. He was a point guard, there was a center. And he just had movements that no one else had.
George, when you think about, you have shot pretty much every Hall of Famer, every All-Star, every great player, every player big and small for, a half century. So it might be hard to narrow down. But were there specific guys, whether the Knicks, obviously the team you shot the most, or anybody else in the league, were there certain guys who you most enjoyed shooting, having that vantage point, from courtside, from the baseline, and that when they came to the Garden, or again, maybe it was one of the Knicks, that you thought, like, this is just somebody I really enjoy tracking and capturing?
Well, the exciting players are like the exciting entertainers. Sometimes these players are like LeBron James and Kobe, Michael Jordan. These players have a charisma to them that makes you want to take a picture of them. That makes you want to capture this charisma. I look at Elton John as an example of an entertainer with the glasses and his cape, and I see Elvis as with his cape, and he got the cape from Little Richard. Your cape idea. And then you go to Michael Jordan coming in, and you can't get enough of Michael. I photographed Michael in his slam dunk contest, which was the first slam dunk contest. That was his first year he played. And I think I got what I would consider really good shots, great shots of Michael. And I just feel that as time goes on and you get enough iconic shots in iconic places iconic moments, that these pictures are going to be more valuable, more interesting. Which reminds me of Sinatra telling me once, we went out to dinner once, and actually, we went out to dinner. We went out to dinner more than once, but we were talking about an event called the Main Event. And Sinatra said, "I want to tell you something." This he told me at our lunch, and he said, "I want to tell you something." He said, "I'm going to tell you something that you never heard before, and that I've kept, and I very rarely have talked to anybody about this, but I want to share it with you." He said, when I was a teenager, my dream was to be the heavyweight champion of the world. I wanted, because there's nothing in the world that has a bigger aura, a bigger platform, a bigger stage than winning the heavyweight championship of the world in Madison Square Garden. You need all of those pieces. You need Madison Square Garden. You need the fact that it's a heavyweight championship fight. That's my dream. Well, I couldn't be that. And I did the best I could. And that's why I came to various people, including yourself, to find out about what they thought about the main event. And I wanted the feeling of not only the main event of a boxing champion, but I wanted the feeling of having the heavyweight, the aura of the heavyweight championship fight, and having it at the Garden. Sinatra said the next best thing was to have it as a concert at the Garden, and I want the ceiling of the Garden, which is so spectacular. I want that to be in my picture of the advertising for it. I want that to have the same quality and the same importance as the ceiling in the Muhammad Ali Joe Frazier fight. So I made some sketches for Frank, and he loved the idea of being under the ceiling in a tuxedo, a white tuxedo with a black tuxedo with a white scarf, and Frank looked dazzling, and it was an opportunity to photograph Frank the way he wanted to be photographed, and he wanted to be pleased, and that's some of the artwork that we shared. But again, he did everything he could to physically and artistically have something that would be very similar to the Muhammad Ali Joe Frazier poster. When the day came of the for the main event event, Sinatra called me. He said, "This is." He used the word marvelous a lot. He said, "This is marvelous," and I was very happy and thrilled about that. And he said, "I hope it works." And the ad ran of Sinatra holding up his hands like this, and with a tuxedo, with the garden ceiling on the top. The ad ran internationally in papers all over the world, and as well as the United States. And we had great shots of the ceiling of Sinatra with his arms up, and it was a Sinatra dream come true.
Very cool. That is possibly one of the coolest stories that could possibly be told, or certainly at least from a photographer's point of view. That's incredible. You've also been part of, witness to, and photographed three really important moments, of course, in New York sports history: the 1970 Knicks championship, the 86 Mets championship, the 94 Rangers, which you were alluding to earlier. Of those three, is there a favorite?
You know, people ask me, what is my favorite photograph? And the truth of the matter is that I have had the privilege to photograph so many important things and to come out with so many important pictures, especially the iconic ones, that it's hard to say. Willis working on the court was a moment that was special, special in the history of the Garden. I think Jesse Orosco on his knees when the Mets won the World Series against Boston, that was really big to me in terms of artistic. It was he's on his knees, his hands are up. I sometimes think that I can do a whole book on just people with their hands up and arms raised. The Pope, which I thought was a great picture that I took, also has his arms raised as he's holding the girl. And I think when it comes down to push and shove, I think the Ollie Frazier fight, which arguably was the greatest sporting event of all time, was the event that I thought was the best.
A couple more before I let you go, because I want to talk about Willis Reed for a minute, because you mentioned him walking on the court. Of course, we're talking about the 1970s NBA Finals, Lakers-Knicks, Game 7. Willis had been injured in Game 5 and missed all of Game 6. So there's the moment of him coming back, of course. This is a legendary moment in sports history, period. And I think there's some backstory there, too, because I know you know Willis Reed very well. Give me a sense of what that moment was for you and what you knew going into that.
I had lunch with Willis that day, May 8th, 1970. And I told Willis, I really meant this. I said, Willis, I'm not sure I want you to play because you can hurt yourself for life. And he said, he's going to play, and he's going to play because maybe only once in your lifetime that you get an opportunity to win a championship. And tonight is an opportunity for me to win a championship. And I'm going to play if I have to crawl out of my hands and knees, and I'm coming out there to play. And he was emphatic about that. And it was so important that Willis play for him, but it was also an important moment of probably the most exciting moment on the court of Madison Square Garden ever, that it was a I kept running into the dressing room to see how Willis was doing. He was getting dressed. All of New York wanted to know. I was the big question. All of New York wanted to know if Willis was going to play. And I'm saying it's not a question. They don't know how he's hurting. But Willis did play. He won the championship for the Knicks. He inspired the Knicks and motivated the Knicks to win, to score the first two baskets. Jerry West was mad at Will Chamberlain because Chamberlain only wanted me to go into the dressing room to find out how Willis was doing. And West said, we're never going to win a game if we're worried about a player's and how a player feels. So West still tells me that the worst moment he ever had on the court was that moment where everybody was worried about Willis, including his team. And that's not what winning is. Winning is when you're determined to beat whoever you're playing and don't worry about anything else but winning. So Willis's name became, it's almost like in the dictionary, you're pulling a Willis Reed if you're coming back from an injury.
And absolutely true, by the way. And we all refer to that now. That is the go-to reference point. And it's interesting. So of all these iconic shots that we've talked about of yours, the one that sticks out to me, George, my personal favorite, is not even on the court. I think it's actually the 73 Knicks team, everybody with the number one up. Willis Reed, Phil Jackson's in that shot, Walt Frazier, Bill Bradley. And of course, Phil Jackson's got this funny gap-toothed grin. There's just something that's the absolute joy of that photo that to me has always leapt out. It just resonates emotionally. That one's a really fun shot as well. And a lot of your work is, of course, already in the Basketball Hall of Fame. So in some ways, your work preceded you to Springfield by several years, I imagine. I don't know how many of your shots are there, but I know that they have quite a collection.
You know, you mentioned Bill Bradley, and I spoke to Bradley actually today. And before the fifth game in 1974, Willis was still hobbling terribly. And Bradley told me that you concentrate with your camera on Bradley, on me, because I'm going to be doing something that I never did before. I'm going to be jumping in joy with showing a lot of emotion on Willis's back. And Willis is going to just have to put up with it because we're going to win tonight. I'm going to show emotion and feelings, which I hardly ever do. And I'm going to show the world that Bill Bradley can really smile, can really get exhilarated, can really get excited in a game, and that you just watch. You'll see what's going to happen. And at the end of the game, with 3 seconds to go, Bradley just breaks away from everybody else, jumps on Willis, has the emotion in his face with his mouth open and his eyes, and that became a really important shot for Bradley. But it also was the earlier part of the evening, where the picture you liked of Bill Bradley with the four other Knicks players holding up their finger, we're number one, and that was a great shot also. But if I had a pick on which is the best shot, I couldn't, because they both show emotion, they both have feelings, and they both have everything you want in a picture.
Absolutely. Well said. Before I let you go, so because of COVID, of course, none of us were in NBA arenas for a long stretch last year. And because of COVID concerns, I know you sat out most or maybe all of this past season. The Knicks are finally good again. which I'm sure is more enjoyable for you. You know, regardless, you can get great photos of winning teams or losing teams, but the Garden's more fun when the Knicks are great. Do you have thoughts on how you're going to handle the upcoming season? What's it been like for you to have to have that detachment for this period of time after so many years of so many events that you've been, you know, present for?
Well, obviously, I'm not the youngest person anymore. And I still enjoy working out, and I enjoy photographing, and I think I can still take as my photographs are still are good, and but things are changing, and I would like to continue as long as I take good pictures. My objective in photographing a game, naturally, is to get good photographs, and I feel that that's what my job is. I can still do it. And as long as the Garden allows me to take the photographs and gives me the privilege to be able to photograph these great entertainers and athletes, I'm going to do it. You know, it's really hard to think about what I'm going to do when I don't take pictures anymore. And in some ways, I look at what I do and I say, you know, you can take pictures as long as you want. Nobody's going to stop you from taking pictures because this is what you enjoy. This is what you do well. This is what you like to do. I've taken 2 million pictures. There's always room for more, I guess. But I will go along with whatever is best for my relationship with the Garden. And the Garden has been, you know, the Garden has been a place where I have been able to photograph on the world's biggest stage, on the world's most famous stage, on the world's most known arena. And this is a responsibility that just can't be taken lightly. The fact that I'm the Garden photographer means that I have to make sure that my pictures are better than anyone else's. And that may seem odd that I say that, but I have the drive in me that wants to, I say to myself, I hope there's 400 photographers here. I hope there's 600 photographers here. So I'm really driven to take the best pictures I can possibly take. And I want to continue to do that as long as I can. And I'm really, as I said, the Garden is a place where you want to take the best pictures to do the best you can. For example, when LeBron James or the Pope or Pavarotti or Sinatra or back in the, Peggy Fleming, these people know that they have to take the best. These people know that they have to perform better than anywhere else. They have to perform at a higher level than any other arena in the world. Madison Square Garden is the showplace of arenas. Matter of fact, and it's the place where, it's the ultimate place where you can perform. And it doesn't matter if you are boxing or basketball or hockey. I think of it as I'm thrilled that I'm able to take all of these pictures. I have the privilege to take all of these pictures, but I just feel that just like the players have, they sort of sweat. LeBron James sweats before he goes on the court. He's nervous. The Pope sweats. Sinatra sweated. You know, even Ali sweated. And so this is the this is the hurdle that I set for myself. This is the the gauge that I have set to, that I have to take pictures that are better than just anybody else's.
Yeah. No, you've got to live up to the legends that you're shooting, as they have the pressure on them at to perform at the Garden. I guess in for you, so do you. But you have lived up to that over and over through decades of sporting events and concerts and everything else. You're the best, George. I'm so happy to see you get this honor with the Kurt Gowdy Award at the Hall of Fame. Congratulations again. Enjoy that moment in a few weeks in Springfield. Great to see you, and hope to see you again at the Garden soon when we both get back there.
Howard, thank you very much. It's always been great to be with you and to talk with you, and I appreciate you having me on your show.
Thank you. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to George Kalinske. Thank you, Sammy Steinlight, for getting us connected today. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And of course, thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.